It's easy to break things, much, much easier, it seems, than building them. Steven Weber. All right. Welcome, 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 everyone. Ladies, gentlemen, and everyone in between. This is Tony's Political Ramblings. And so today, as the quote at the front of this episode would like to indicate, I'm going to take you into a little more of an abstract direction here. We're going to take a look at the two U.S. political parties as they manifest themselves today and in recent history. And we're going to look at the history on how we got here. And fundamentally, I'm going to set up this dichotomy between the two parties. And eventually I'm going to posit that, in essence, one party builds and the other party breaks. And you can sort of come to your own conclusions on that. But one party will build and the other will break. And as the beginning of this episode indicated, it's a lot harder to build than it is to break. And this is true on the individual level. You know, you can very easily slam something against the wall, the ground, what have you, and it shatters into a million pieces. It doesn't take a lot of effort, but it takes more effort to put that back together again, or even to build something in the first place. And so if we look at, again, on a personal level, if you want to put together a piece of IKEA furniture or something along those lines, that's a lot more difficult than it is to tear the darn thing down when you're done with it. And so when you take that idea and you move it to the government, to the federal government in terms of policymaking, it's a lot harder to build a massive infrastructure deal, tax code, social policy, what have you, than it is to take those down. And so let's begin in the New Deal era, in the 1930s, once FDR is elected president of the United States following the Great Depression and the Roaring 20s. In the Roaring 20s, there was a lot of deregulation. There was a lot of loose laissez-faire type capitalism playing. And it didn't work, as it often does, as often doesn't work. So what ended up happening was this gigantic economic collapse we call the Great Depression. It was a really horrible situation back in the day. Massive unemployment, job loss, stock market crashes, etc., etc. And so FDR is elected president, a Democrat, and he commits to expanding and creating new government agencies and ways to regulate the country in a way that really were unprecedented and still have set the sort of tone for how the government should act ever since. And that's why I'm starting the story back here. He establishes agencies like the FDIC, the Tennessee Valley Authority, Federal Communications Commission. The FDIC is the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. You have the Securities Exchange Commission. So there are a lot of different areas that the government is operating in now following FDR than they weren't before. And so this helped. It didn't ultimately solve the Great Depression. But it pushed the U.S. in the right direction. And I believe had World War II not happened, we would have probably leveled out and gotten back to a position of economic strength, but it would have taken longer. That's my opinion. But obviously, World War II, a massive production environment where you have gigantic, expensive pieces of machinery and weaponry being sent overseas to Europe and Japan, that really helps stimulate the economy, that really helps provide jobs. But even before World War II, there was still a lot of that happening because of this expansion of government jobs, availability of government jobs, expansion of you know, different opportunities to make money and things like that. So FDR really did a lot to expand the different areas that the federal government operates. Notice that I don't say expand the size of the federal government. Just moves it in different areas that it hasn't before. And I think it's an important distinction to bear in mind as we keep this episode moving along here. So then we move through the 1940s. Truman follows a lot of the same processes, expansion of rights, and expansion of opportunities for work, et cetera, et cetera. And you get to the 1950s, you have President Eisenhower, who is a Republican, but when he was obviously, he was a general before he was a politician, so his political leanings weren't really exactly clear, and both parties were fighting for him to be the representative, and both parties legitimately saw him to be their representative in the 1952 election. So he was definitely more towards the center. So let's bear that in mind as well. But even in the 1950s, under a Republican, riding a lot of the success of the 1940s, the industrial boom and the economic prosperity that the United States had following the FDR and Truman administrations, Eisenhower invested in things like infrastructure and the United States highway system. If you've ever taken any of the major highways in the United States, I-70, I-10 out west, I-95 up and down the East Coast, you know, you have, that was a product of Eisenhower. And this massive infrastructure project and big government spending projects on that. And so into the 60s, you have JFK building on that with NASA. You have LBJ and his Great Society initiatives. You have expansions of voting and civil rights that, again, were unprecedented in the United States. And these were all regulated and created by the federal government. These were built by the federal government in the 1960s. Moving into the 70s, you had Carter, who built energy policy and a way to make efforts to conserve our natural resources. So you have all the way from the 1940s, when the New Deal starts, all the way until the 1970s. And even Republican candidates at the time were still considered New Dealers because they were all sort of built, cut from the same cloth as FDR, since he was such an influential figure on the U.S. government and the United States in general. And then, however, you get into the 1980s, and that is when Republican Ronald Reagan is elected into office, and a lot of the deregulation begins. You have union busting, you have the air traffic control strike in the early 80s that ends in him firing many of the air traffic controllers in the United States. You have tax cuts. And a massive increase in military spending, and so again, the shape, the size of the federal government here isn't changing. By the way, despite the fact of these claims of small government from the Reagan administration, they're just moving into different areas. They're moving into military spending, and they're moving into rewriting the tax code to benefit wealthy individuals, and breaking those protections that were there for middle and lower class Americans. And so this continues into the George H.W. Bush presidency. You have, again, more deregulation of a lot of, and undoing a lot of the work had been done since the 1930s. And you get to Clinton, a Democrat, establishes gun safety laws, he balances the U.S. budget so that by the time he leaves, he's built himself a budget surplus. First time that had happened in decades. And this is especially impressive because during the Reagan administration, there was a lot of borrowing, but there wasn't a lot of tax revenue coming in to cover it. And then in the Clinton era, this was flipped and they ended up with a budget surplus. Though Clinton definitely was influenced by Reagan in the sense that there was this push forward making government agencies more efficient. So anyway, we move to Bush. He sank the U.S. into two wars and drove up the national debt because he also cut taxes. And there was this idea, I forget where it came from exactly, but this idea from this one individual who said that I want the federal government to be small enough that I could drown it in a bathtub. Again, you're breaking down these agencies, you're cutting their budgets, you're slashing their ability to do their jobs in the same way. But again, Bush also created the Department of Homeland Security. So again, despite this small government idea, Bush actually created a new agency. The size of the government isn't changing. Rather, it's just the direction that the money is flowing in is. You had wars where, for the first time in U.S. history, the number of private soldiers in the U.S.'s forces outnumbered those who were actual members of the U.S. military. And so this is a big payday for government contractors, for defense contractors in particular. And money from the federal government was just being poured into the military and defense and security, just poured hand over fist. These profits were being made by these defense contractors, and they were coming out of other agencies, Environmental Protection Agency, Department of Education, et cetera, et cetera. The size is not changing. It's just where it's going and what you're breaking to get it there. Obama came back and wins the presidency in 2008, has to recover from, again, a low tax revenue and an economic recession, the Great Recession in the late 2000s. And he establishes the Fair Pay Act, which will work to guarantee women the same pay as men. The Obamacare, or the Affordable Care Act, which is built insurance for millions of Americans who were uninsured before, and who would have been uninsured, myself included, and established the Paris Climate Accords in an attempt to rein in climate change, worked to lead the climate accords internationally, of course, and left the White House having built a lot. Former President Trump comes in, pulled out of the Paris Climate Accords, destroyed the international norms, and even the notion of truth, the belief in our election systems were questioned because he tried to overturn it in 2020, and he even was casting doubt as far back as 2016. He infested government agencies with his own partisan appointees, when the civil service has been nonpartisan for decades. Decades. This has never been an issue. But his appointees all over these agencies worked to break them, to just rot them from the inside out. And so now we get to current President Biden, who has had to recover from the coronavirus pandemic that was handled in quotes, under the Trump administration. He's cut childhood poverty with the American Rescue Plan, and he's working to build these two infrastructure bills, not unlike Eisenhower, to reinvent and stimulate the U.S. economy. And so that's where we are today. Those infrastructure bills have yet to pass at the time of recording. And he's also trying to shore up voting rights as well. That's also going on. And so that's where we find ourselves at the time of my recording this. And if we look back at the history and we see the common themes here, one party has been on the side of moving the federal government's resources around so that they benefit people, the people on the whole. They build things, they create, they expand protections, establish civil rights for all groups. And then you have the other who breaks them, who deregulates, who dismantles, who disintegrates the trust in our nonpartisan, expert-based civil service and American government. You have two parties who live and operate under the same roof in Congress, but couldn't seem to be going in more opposite directions.